We're a second half to this. We have a question. This is a time for audience feedback. Emma put forward the question, and I would love to hear, as would Emma, so would everyone else. Now's the time to share it. Why do you think it would be important that children use Ubuntu? You look at our schools today, and heck, there was even an article I saw on Google+. Why is it my daughter faces programming and learning about it with Visual Basic in school? Why? Why is the first time she gets introduced to programming is VB? Why not Perl? Why not C? Why not BW Basic or anything else that's in the archive? Big question there. But, now the way this will work out, we have the magic microphone. As you notice, there's a stand, but it's always been a wireless all day long. Emma will be coming around, and we would love for you to sound off. Just tell us who you are, where you're from, and what your answer is. And all she's looking for is a raised hand. And it's okay. To start us off, here's my answer to that question. And I have a simple one. Why is it important that children use Ubuntu? Simply put, if Neil LaPorte, of all people, Neil LaPorte the tech, has problems with Windows 8, and says repeatedly on shows like Windows Weekly that he can't get into it, that he has problems adapting to it, and this is the tech guy himself, and we want young people today to learn what the basics of a computer are, other than it being just a shiny rectangular thing that glows. Well, once upon a time, back when I was in school during the Clinton years, we had Consumer Automotive where I had to learn how did a car work. And I actually had to do work on an automobile. Ubuntu gives us a chance to allow children, first and foremost, to use a computer in a way that is productive, but also as they learn and grow, to be able to dig under the hood and to see what makes this thing tick and what can I do to make it tick the way I want it to. Well, that's what I have to say to the question. Emma has a magic microphone, and she definitely looks for your feedback. And don't worry, who's going to hear you? We never know when this audio will ever reach air. We never know. We're still waiting for 2 years ago. But for everyone here, let this be a time of sharing. And with that, I hand over to Ms. Marshall. So who wants to go first?
Good. Hi, my name is Rick Wills. I'm from the Dayton Lenin SIG over in, I live in the little north suburb, just north of Dayton, called New Rides. I have two grandsons, how are they now? Four and seven. And of course, I know if you're seeing 4 and 7 year olds today, that one reason my daughter and her husband shuts them up is they'll each hand them their cell phone. It's a smartphone. I think if kids, they also have tablets, so my wife's tablets, of course, the kids come over and they play my wife's tablet all the time, and they can use it better than I can, to be honest about it. 7 year old's a whiz, I can't believe it. Anyway, I think if kids are going to be learning these things all the time, my 28-year-old, who happens to work for LexisNexis, started typing when he was 4 on my computer, which was a Commodore 64. The kids of my grandson's ages are going to have to be using this stuff in a way I never imagined. You know, I was raised, I went to Ohio State, and we had remember the card readers, and we had key punch cards. That's my level of high tech in college. So the kids today need to be using this stuff. I think Ubuntu, I'd like to see Ubuntu on a tablet. In fact, I'm going to try to buy a tablet this Christmas, and I don't know if you can put Ubuntu on or not, but I'm going to see if we can find one. And I'm going to give it to them and say, here, play with this, kids, and let them see what they can do. And I think Ubuntu, I like the idea of the Ubuntu overall overall platforms. I'm gonna try that at home myself. So yeah, I think kids using, is this is the wave of the future. The kids will be seeing the same, hopefully they'll see the same system in numerous, you know, numerous platforms. And I think this is a good place for them to start, is using it. And I'm certain once, you know, once my grandson gets Ubuntu, he'll probably start, you know, asking me to play with him with. So it's, I'll learn something for sure.
Thank you.
Who else? Anyone else?
I had another point to add too. So did you guys know that 25% of the world doesn't have internet? It's kind of a really alarming number to me. But if you have Ubuntu on your system, and if you load Edubuntu on a system in a low-income area that will not have access to internet, you have all the learning tools. There's this app called Celestia. Did you know you can explore the universe without the internet just because of this app? And there's an offline Wikipedia, so an offline encyclopedia. All of these things exist, and they don't need to get the internet. They don't need any additional resources. Everything they have is built into Ubuntu. And if it's not, they can ask someone to maybe develop it if they jump into the forums or something. So I think that's another big thing, is that it works for people without internet, and that's important in low-income areas.
And Emma, one thing I'll add to that is Mr. Jason Griffey with the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, is developing a little project of his own. It was recently on Indiegogo called Library in a Box, where if you're looking to go beyond the resources of Edubuntu, he's actually trying to build a portable server, portable wireless access point, offline Wikipedia, Project Gutenberg Mirror, and everything else you can want on it. And he's trying to get it built to where it's a saleable device so that you can have that to ride along too. So that is available as a companion to go along. It's not just a dream to say, can someone code this? It's being built. Granted, a librarian's building it, so it might take a little longer. But it's being built. So who else?
Hi there, I'm Mike Kellett. I'm Steve's dad. In doing computers for learning with the U.S. government in the 90s and up until 2006, it is really surprising how many areas, you know, you're saying 25% of the world doesn't have internet. You'd be surprised how much of this country where an internet connection is almost impossible. Kids grow up, they hear about computers and whatever else, they might have a computer, but for them to get to the net, to be able to go online and look for things, is out in the Midwest, is virtually impossible. It's like the cable companies, they won't put cable into an area unless there's 12 people per square mile. You start getting out in the farmlands out in the Midwest where you have maybe 4 or 5 people in a 50 square mile area. I mean, they're you know, totally without access. So, I mean, you know, 25% around the world is one thing, but there is a large portion of this country where there is no internet connectivity.
Who else?
I actually have a question. Mm-hmm. My question is, you might have covered this earlier in talking to Human Light.
My question is, have you had experience setting up Linux-based classrooms in schools, and what has been the acceptance of those? Have there been resistance from school administrators to do that?
I was doing this, the program, the government was kind of working with Microsoft and Apple, and that the computers we donated had to be reinstalled with the original operating system that we received it with. So you're talking, with me working there, I was working on anything from mainframes down to ancient CMP machines that they happen to find in closets. And the schools themselves, the schools are the ones that are stuck in the middle. They can get the equipment from the government and whatever. They do come with a basic operating system. But the problem is, you know, not so much that the equipment's antiquated, is the operating system you're given on that equipment isn't up to snuff to today's standards. We looked at trying to give them something better, but our licenses with Apple, with Microsoft, in turn dictated to us that, you know, this is what we had to give them with the machines. So yeah, even the government is, like what the other guys were talking about, you know, the rules and regulations they're bound by. The federal government was in the same boat with that. But once it gets to the schools, that's another story. They can put on there whatever they want. If they have Streetsboro schools south of Cleveland, they have four guys that do the tech program for the whole schools, and the second version of OS 10 they had operating on PCs.
Really big Hackintosh.
I mean, I went over there to drop off some stuff and check this out. And he fires up a Dell laptop and it's running OS 10. And it ran quite well. And there's schools out there that, you know, if they're lucky enough to have the qualified people, but the schools I, for the most part, dealt with that I was going to after work and help them set up, they didn't have the tech people. Parochial schools, for the most part, I mean, they just select one teacher and say, okay, you're going to be in charge of the computer lab. You know, they have no clue what they're getting in, what they got to deal with operating system wise. And now whether everything there is going to, you know, cooperate with each other, with each, you know, each system they have, where, you know, if it gets known that, you know, Ubuntu is out there, it's free, yeah, you know, that's the other thing they're looking at. Because for a while, Microsoft was, with the donated systems, giving them free licenses. But it was only for so many machines and only for a certain period of time. A lot of the free licenses eventually expired, so they're back, and then now they have to buy a license from Microsoft for systems that Microsoft no longer supports.
So you got older hardware and the new OS doesn't support it.
Well, they still want them to keep the original OS that was on that machine, but they want to collect license for that for something that they're not going to give them support for. Which has been another problem, where, you know, with open source, I mean, we need to find a way of letting school systems and, you know, people that are receiving this stuff know that there are people out there, you know, like us, that, you know, we can get access to the operating systems with the apps that, you know, that are viable for them to use, and hopefully we can help them, you know, show them that, you know, it's not that difficult to install. It's not that difficult to use. And
a couple other things I will mention is that from the Ohio perspective, you also have countervailing institutional pressures. It's very hard to have a heterogeneous computing environment. For example, you have EMIS, the Educational Management Information System that tracks every student in the state of Ohio, run by our dear friends here in Columbus at the Ohio Department of Education. Great system. It's stuck on Windows. It's never going to leave Windows.
But when you have that stuck on Windows situation, you create a heterogeneous environment if you decide to bring Linux into the classroom, because then you bring the question, well, why is the secretary who's doing all the data coordination stuck on Windows? Why does she have to use that when no one else does? It's the same thing for our townships and our public library districts and a few other types of agency, with the Uniform Accounting Network here in the state of Ohio, set up by the Auditor of State, currently administered by David Yost. It's a great system. It allows for uniform bookkeeping across all those units of government.
Talking about OOKS.
UAN. Problem is, it's based in Microsoft Windows. And it has a very, very specific platform, very, very specific specification down to the type of machine and peripherals that it will have. To get local governments to shift here in Ohio, unfortunately, it's going to take some state action. And I don't have resources yet to push that. But I did see a hand in the back, so let me...
Yes, my name is Mike Rayner. I'm a retired teacher from Columbus City Schools. And one way around that is to use virtualization. And that's what I did with my lab for one course, is I actually set up Ubuntu virtualized. And the students, they got, students at first, they, after they got used to it, they really liked trying to find their own Linux distro and just, okay, let me try this one or something like that. And they could also, because it's virtualized, they can also run it at home. And as far as administration concerned, they were a little bit concerned about running virtual machines because they weren't under their thumb, but I got around that. But everything else, like I say, everything else was Windows. And I ran both virtual servers, both in Windows and actually, I also ran, at that time was XP virtual machines too. So that's one way around it. And VirtualBoxes, I don't think they're open source anymore. I know they're free. Yeah. They have an excellent product that works for virtual desktops.
It's mostly open source.
The way it works out with VirtualBox is we do have them in the archive. One of the folks here from the Ohio Loco actually helped put a lot of pressure into getting the version of VirtualBox in the archive updated to track with the open source edition from Oracle. As was said at the start of the day, we may not have a lot of numbers here in Ubuntu, Ohio. We may not be the best, but we sure are loud. We do a lot. So, in the end, we ask the question, why is it important that children use Ubuntu? We've heard many perspectives, many different views on that. Now, I'm looking at the clock. It's about 1:48. Coming up at 2, we've got our discussion of BIOS and UEFI, one of the biggest gremlins in building computers today. If you want to take the moment to duck away to get coffee or to visit the head, now's a good chance. And other than that, let's take a break. Hold on.
I just wanted to say a quick comment at the end. I used to work at a university, and I used to tell this to university students, but it applies to children as well, is when I went to school, you had to pay for a compiler. Like, when I went to college, you had to pay for your compiler. The only way you can get a Unix workstation was to like walk to the computer lab in the snow uphill both ways, obviously, right? To use some $10,000 Solaris machine that like I hated, right? And that was technology for work. That's how I learned technology. Think about what a college student or a kid has to work with today. An entire free operating system, not just for their desktop, not just a multiple compiler, an entire free operating system for tablets, phones, even the hardware is becoming open. Like, have you guys ever seen a kid with a Raspberry Pi? It's insane. Like, And this is all stuff that we didn't have, right? I had to, and that compiler, it was like $300 or something, right? Right, it was like horrible. And now all these tools are available for free, and for free as in available for them to improve it for the next generation. So I think it's important to think that, you know, like my dad got me a TRS-80, right? That's like my first computer, and that's why I learned, right? And my dad's like, that was the best investment I ever made. Look what you've done with your life, right? You're like a total nerd. can you imagine what this next generation is going to do with Linux, Ubuntu, Android, Raspberry Pis, Arduino, right? I encourage you, if you're ever around, go. Dean Kamen has this program called FIRST. It's for elementary and high school students building robots that do competition. And some of the stuff that these kids are building is incredible. So I just wanted to say that because I look at kids these days, I was like, man, if, you know, like the coolest thing I had when I was growing, like learning VI. That's like all I had, right? I got to learn VI today. That's the most exciting thing I did, you know? So I just think, I think it's cool, and I think we should encourage that kind of stuff because, I mean, they're the ones that are building all the stuff that we're going to use.
FIRST competition is another NASA project.
Is it what?
The FIRST competition is another project from NASA to get students interested in engineering, computing, and mathematics.
I saw a robot shoot a frisbee at like 65 miles an hour at a target. I was like, dude, I can't even put an erector set together. The kid was like 15 years old.
They have a national competition every year. They put out, okay, we want you to build a robot to do a specific thing, and it goes by regions of the nine NASA centers compete, and they take the winners of those regions, and they all go to D.C., and they have a playoff one against the other, and it gets interesting. It's a lot of fun.
I got to be a judge on it. I think it's an awesome program.
Unless we forget, folks, Mr. George Castro of Canonical.
Come to my talk at 3 o'clock. It's going to be great.
So again, folks, if you want to take a quick break, stretch your legs and all that, we reconvene at 2 o'clock.